We have invited Julie Schwarmer-Harris here of the, she's a co-chair of the Legislative Agenda for Women. Mm-hmm. I got it, or law as it works out too. To come and talk to us about what is happening down there in Baton Rouge as it relates to women and their bodies. We always know, or there's always something that's happening where the rights of women are trying to be retracted. So we always have to be diligent about staying aware of what's happening. Thank you for coming in, Julie.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Just to start off, can you tell us about the Legislative Agenda for Women and what you do over there?
The Legislative Agenda for Women is a coalition of organizations that organized itself about a year and a half ago, close to 2 years ago, to work on issues not just related to the physical aspects of mm-hmm. the control of women, because there actually is a parallel coalition working on choice issues. Mm-hmm. But we work on various issues related to women and families. Our mission is to work on the improvement and just the ability of women to take control of their lives financially, medically, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. Because if women are doing well, families are doing well. And we're very interested in what's happening with families, young people, and the men in their lives. It's combined of a lot of organizations: League of Women Voters, American Association of University Women, National Organization for Women Now, IWO, Independent Women's Organization, as well as some of the more pro-choice abortion-focused organizations, New Orleans Abortion Fund, Women with a Vision, who works with LGBT and marginal populations. But the difference in our focus is that we are really trying to educate people on that layer of government, the state government, that people just aren't aware of. You can ask people who their senators are, they'll kind of roll their eyeballs and say, Mary Landrieu or a bit, or, you know, they kind of remember that. And you can ask them who their mayor is, they know their mayor. They know the governor, bless them. But if you ask them who their state legislator is, and you have two, each of us have a senator and a state senator and a state rep, they don't know. And they don't realize that a lot of what is impacting our lives in a very negative way has to do with the state level. So we're trying to educate them on that. Know your legislator, know who they are, know how to contact them, and develop a relationship, whether by email, by phone, or getting to know them in some more personal way. That is our goal working with any organization or any individual that is willing to listen to us and then participate in what we're working on.
So because you said that, now I'm like, okay, well, educate us. Tell us who all of are the ones for that that we would vote for here in New Orleans, who are our state representatives and national representatives.
Okay, well, Tulane University is in the district of Representative Neil Abramson and State Senator Karen Carter Peterson. But Tulane University students and those of us in Orleans Parish, there's a whole Orleans delegation of state representatives and state senators, some of whom, most of their districts are not even in Orleans Parish. If you live in certain areas just about 10, 20, 15 blocks from here, you may be in State Senator Conrad Appel's district. He's a Republican from Metairie, who chairs the Education Committee that has some very important decisions to make on not just on education and academic issues, but on funding for education, on charter schools, on vouchers, on sex education, et cetera. So, you know, people live in this region. We don't live just in the city. And though many of the legislators from Orleans Parish are extremely progressive in a way, I think not all, but many of the Tulane students might empathize with and be supportive of, there are many positions these legislators take that you may not disagree with. And you just need to know, follow those issues that you care about, and know who to call to say, please vote for or against this. You've got some very active organizations, particularly on choice, that I am aware of. You've got a Planned Parenthood Vox chapter that works in close conjunction with Planned Parenthood on issues related to women's health, preventive health care, family planning, and eventually providing abortion services. You've got Law Students for Reproductive LSRJ Justice, LSRJ, Law Students for Reproductive Justice, who work on also issues related to abortion. You've got Med Students for Choice down at the Tulane Med School. And I'm sure you have many other organizations I don't even know about who are working on LGBT issues or issues related to minimum wage and equity, et cetera. So Tulane is very rich in political activism. But even when I challenge politically active students, politically active seniors, I'm talking about old people, politically active people who participate in politics and even donate to candidates, they lose track of this whole level of state government.
So does the Legislative Agenda for Women, does that coalition actually, does any legislation come out of there, or do you just kind of work with senators or legislators like maybe Pat Smith or someone like that?
Okay. We have done both. We as this coalition of organizations that have positions already taken, because we are only a coalition, and we don't exist as our own 501c3. We are not, in a sense, a legal entity ourselves, but we work with organizations that each have their issues, and we decided to coalesce around a few of them. We chose Medicaid expansion, which is the trying to force the state. Our state is one of, about less than half of the states in the country, but unfortunately part of a majority of states in the South that have chosen not to participate in the Affordable Care Act as passed by Congress, and not to expand Medicaid to a larger percentage of people. So in Louisiana, that means about 250,000 people are not going to get access to the Medicaid expansion insurance, which would give them access to health insurance. We are not doing that here, but we've been trying to push that in the legislature. There's a whole separate health care coalition around that we participate with, again, using our grassroots knowledge and pressure to try and get that thing passed. It's not dead yet. They've killed a couple of bills up there, but we follow the lead of a healthcare for everyone Louisiana coalition on that. We did not initiate that. We are working on equal pay for women, or just pay equity in general. It's not just for women. It's equal pay, period. We don't want men to be discriminated against either. And that's a tough issue in this state because it goes up against what are perceived to be business interests, which truly, if businesses wanted to thrive, they would be for equality and for equal pay for all, because it does actually help the economy. But there we have been more proactive at developing legislation that we want to see passed. And in a few minutes, if you want, I can go into more details about what we're doing on equal pay. And we're also working on sex education. These are three broad topics that our groups felt like we could work on as a coalition without going too far abroad. There are so many vital issues in the legislature. Some of our groups are choosing to work on even more. A lot of us are working on the abortion issue and trying to keep abortion, which is a legal medical procedure, available to people. A lot of us are working on domestic violence. There have been some very important and successful, actually, domestic violence initiatives that we are supporting as well. LGBT, unfortunately, in this legislative session, the anti-discrimination issues around LGBT have just been unsuccessful. They have not been successful. It's interesting. The country's going one way. We seem to be going the other in Louisiana. But anyway, so we work on a full range, and you choose any one of those, and you got a full-time job just as a volunteer trying to follow them and support them and develop grassroots activism around them, because that is what will change the situation.
So I definitely want to delve into some of those – some of those issues that you just said. I want to unpack them a little bit and see what's going on in the legislation. And I guess we can start with sex education, because I just read yesterday, I have to, for my full-time gig, I have to follow some legislation as well. And one of the things that I had seen was that out of commission, I think it was yesterday, out of committee, excuse me, the teens are allowed to do anonymous sex, or not anonymous, but sexual surveys on their sexuality, that without their parents' consent.
Okay, so what you're talking about, yes, and there was a a step of success. This is just one step right. in the process. So Pat Smith, who is a state representative from Baton Rouge, mm-hmm. wonderful woman, has been working on trying to expand access to comprehensive sex education mm-hmm. in Louisiana for many years. We do have permissive laws. It is permitted to teach sex education in public schools. Abstinence is promoted. Abstinence is required to be part of the curriculum, which is fine because abstinence is the surest way to not get pregnant and to not get a sexually transmitted disease. But we know that abstinence by itself doesn't work. Mm-hmm. We have some of the highest STDs, the highest mm-hmm. HIV rates in the country. We have among the highest unintended pregnancy rates among young people in the country. So obviously what we're doing here is not working. So Pat Smith has two main bills. One is to require comprehensive sex education in schools, and that is HB 369. That is being discussed probably right now or in a few minutes at 9 o'clock. That's going to be discussed in the House Education Committee. But what passed out of committee was HB 369, which is to allow surveying of students on sexual activity that is done all over the country. It's called the YRBS, Youth Risk Behavior Survey. Mm. It's a survey done in schools, again, all over the country, that talks about risk behaviors. And it's done anonymously, and you generally don't have to have permission from your parents to answer, and they don't, you know, keep the records by student. It's just to have a baseline to know what are students doing that's risky. Mm-hmm. And if you do an intervention, whether it's a drug-free schools program or a drinking and driving program or a comprehensive sex education program, if you have a baseline, then you can measure if, when you resurvey, if that program, that intervention has had any effect. And it's very important with comprehensive sex education that you do this accountability measure so that you can tell if the program is working. And yes, it's self-reported. What they find, though, is that not only in the self-reporting, youth are having less sexual encounters, safer sexual encounters if they learn about the dangers of sexual encounters without protection. But they also find that the outcomes with comprehensive sex education will lead to fewer unintended pregnancies and higher graduation rates because young people are able to finish school because they're not having babies. So we know it works. In Louisiana, a few years ago, they outlawed the sex questions of the YRBS. You can ask the YRBS, but you can't ask the sex questions. It was outlawed in Louisiana. Mm. So all we're trying to do is say, let schools ask the anonymous sex activity questions so that we can have a baseline, so that we have access to federal dollars to use for comprehensive sex ed in schools, because we know it works. The first step was yesterday. That bill got out of a House committee. It's got three more steps in the gauntlet. It's got to go to the full House. It's got to go to the Senate Committee on Education. Conrad Appel, an Uptown and Metairie state senator, is the chair of that committee, although he's not the only member on that committee. And that committee is a tough one to get these things by. And then it's got to go to the full Senate. So we're excited. We're hopeful. But we got a long way to go before that bill passes.
Mm. And so what are the some of the legislation that's been coming up around abortion issues or the issues of abortion access, excuse me?
OK, there are several bills and that we would consider anti-choice, i.e. Having an effect on someone's access to abortion. The most dangerous is HB 388, and it's been introduced by a state representative, a woman named Katrina Jackson from Monroe, the Monroe area. It is purporting to be for the safety of women. It's about admitting privileges. And this is a bill that's been used all over the country, most recently and most prominently in Texas, to actually limit access to abortion because it puts a lot of medically unnecessary bureaucratic roadblocks to clinics performing abortions and to doctors, even doctors in their own offices. It's a disincentive for them. So this bill that is about admitting privileges, which are not needed because abortion is safe, abortion already, you've got medical procedures in place that protect women for the very few and rare instances where abortion is a problem. abortion is much safer than having a child. It's safer than having a colonoscopy. It's safer than a whole lot of things. Hmm. But they put these things in place under the guise of them being for the safety of women. So we know that it's not needed. And we've been fighting this bill all through its steps. It passed the House committee. It passed the full House. It has passed the Senate Health and Welfare Committee, and it is now in the full Senate. So today there will be a vote on HB 388. And anyone that is against this bill, which will limit access to abortion by closing probably 3 of the 5 existing clinics in Louisiana, and those 3 are going to be the one in New Orleans, the one in Metairie, and the one in Baton Rouge, because those doctors do not currently have, nor is it projected that they will be able to get, admitting privileges to local hospitals. Local hospitals don't just give them out. And they're not necessary, but they don't just give them out. They purposefully do not give them to doctors performing abortions in many instances. So it's going to close those 3 clinics. And we urge people that care about this bill to light up the call number at the Senate, the state Senate, 225-342-2040. Call your senator. Call all senators. Call anybody you're willing to call. But try to get people from around the state, not just uptown New Orleans, because our state senator, Karen Carter-Peterson, understands the implications of this bill. She has voted against this type of bill before, and she'll vote against it again. But we are senators throughout our state that need to hear from us that we don't want this bill. We don't want to limit access. Women will die. They won't be helped. They will die because they will be forced by the lack of access to go to back alley plans, do it yourself, whatever, because women will do what they need to do if they need to prevent being pregnant or stop being pregnant.
Yeah, I was curious also, this is just a question, I don't know the answer, but
I hope I do.
Do you know, like, what kind of influence ALEC or organizations like that have on our legislature, or what kind of effect just sort of the Republican, you know, there's a lot of, like, commercials going on right now against Mary Landrieu and sort of the, what are they called, the big organizations of the Republican Party, like the national, like how they affect our legislature.
Well, they affect it greatly. These are basically nonpartisan issues in the sense that, particularly in Louisiana, we have Democrats and Republicans who vote against what I would consider, and probably you if you agree with me, the interests of women and families. So in Louisiana, it's pretty nonpartisan, but a lot of the source of this, I mean, ALEC and some of the organizations that are strongly anti-abortion, they take these bills, they send them all over the country, and people pick them up that either agree with them philosophically or feel like it's in their interest to support this type of bill. And you see it around the country. There's nothing new about these bills. They are used to limit access to abortion and to, and there's one I want to talk about in a minute, put the pregnant woman as a third category of citizen in the country. And I can't say whether it's ALEC that's doing it. Certainly the anti-choice movement is doing it. There's another bill in the legislature that purports to protect women. Actually, it purports to save babies. It purports to help babies. And it is now called, it is now number 1274. And it's by State Representative Austin Badon of the New Orleans region, of New Orleans area. He's from New Orleans East. And the thing is, what this bill says, It puts pregnant women that are dying, either brain dead or just they are dying. Mm-hmm. It takes away the choice from the family and from the woman, even if she has left a living will, to decide to be unplugged from life support machines and die. And it puts all kinds of questions and ambiguities into whether or not you're going to try and save that baby using the woman as an incubator, in a sense, like a body, not live. It's not really live. It's just kept on a machine to finish the growth of what is inside that woman. And it the problem with this is there may be families that would choose to keep a pregnant woman woman, a wife, a daughter, you know, or the child, or an adult child if the mother were pregnant, you know, might choose to keep a woman on life support for all kinds of religious reasons. That is fine. That is their choice. But what it does is it inserts the law in there and saying hospitals must, or doctors, you know, have to decide this way and make that decision for a family, regardless of what they want to do or feel is appropriate to do with that, you know, sadly dying pregnant woman. These are bills that, again, they purport to be for the sake of the baby, the sake of the whatever. But what they are is it's another sort of nail in the coffin of the rights of a pregnant woman to make decisions. You know, whether it's a pregnant woman who, you know, just found out she's pregnant and wants to take RU486, you know, take whatever the abortion pill is and end that pregnancy. It's not a good time in her life. Or whether it's a pregnant woman who is, you know, several months pregnant and then from whatever horrible disease, maybe because she didn't have health care, which wasn't provided before she got pregnant by the state because they refused to do Medicaid expansion. You know, it just takes those decisions away from people and puts that pregnant woman into a whole different category of citizen that is extremely dangerous. It is unconstitutional. It should be found to be unconstitutional. And we've got to fight those kind of bills. And that is HB 1274, which is right now pending, but hasn't been heard yet by the Senate Health and Welfare Committee. So any interested parties in that bill should follow it.
There was something that you said you wanted to go more into. I wasn't sure if you had yet, because I don't want to ask
equal
you.
Equal pay for women. We can talk about that.
Before you do think, that, let me just do a time check with you. Sure. So it's about 8:41 and okay, you're fine. All right, equal pay.
All right, so definitely money helps people do whatever they need to do. Including if this state outlawed abortion, abortion weren't even available, if you've got money, and this is what is happening right now, people with money can go elsewhere to get abortions. People with money can find health care no matter whether the state takes Medicaid expansion or not. People with money will make sure their kids go to a school that teaches them sex education, will make sure their children have all the knowledge and opportunities they need. So money is very important. And what we find, the statistics show, is that women are not paid equal to men. No matter how you slice it and dice it. Across the country, women make 70 cents on the dollar on average compared to a man. In this state, it's less. It's only 67 cents on the dollar on average compared to men for full-time, year-round work. Now, there are women who make more than men. There are women who make much less than that. If you're an African-American woman, if you're a Latina woman, you're making even less than that on the dollar. So we have a serious problem. And there's all kinds of reasons why women make less, but a big factor in that is discrimination. We have laws on the books, particularly focused on intentional discrimination, that say it's illegal to intentionally discriminate. There are federal laws and there are state laws, but there are a couple things that make those laws ineffective, obviously, because we've had laws on the books for a long time and we still have this problem. One of them is, in the private sector particularly, women do not have the right to even talk about their pay in the workplace. You don't have free speech rights in the workplace. You can be fired for talking about your pay in the workplace. And what they're trying to do at the federal level and what we would love to do at the state level is to say, no, you should be able to talk about your pay if, you know, not to cause disruption in the workplace, but to speak about pay just to be aware of whether you are being discriminatorily paid. Lily Ledbetter, everybody knows Lily Ledbetter, never knew for 20 years that she was being paid less than other supervisors doing the exact same work for less money.
And if it wasn't a problem, it wouldn't be disruptive.
Correct. I agree with you. So anyway, so one thing has to do with, you know, just protection from retaliation for disclosing, for talking about wages. Another has to do with just if you've got an incentive, if the law says it's not just wrong to intentionally discriminate, but the fact of paying discriminatory wages, whether you intended to or not, if you just did it for other reasons that weren't bona fide business reasons, what we're trying to say is let's require that businesses pay fairly, encourage them to do self audits, to analyze their own pay scales, analyze their own work practices, so that they've taken the steps to correct what may be unintentional discrimination, unintentional unequal pay. We had some success last year with a bill that was a very, it was a more ambitious bill than it actually passed as. It passed as a bill only covering state public workers. Now you would say, well, in state public workers, isn't it all civil service? Aren't they all paid, you know, merit-based? And what you find is, for the most part, people in public sectors are paid more equally than in the private sector. In the public sector, it's in the 80 cents range. Some, you know, in some, it may be up to the 90 to the dollar, 90 cents to the dollar range, women to men. But it isn't all, you know, peaches and cream in the public sector either. There is still unintentional discrimination in, you know, various categories of work. We've historically remunerated women less than men for women, pink collar type, women type work. You know, if there are more women that are nurses, nurses were historically lower paid than others. And even men in that profession make more than women in that profession. And in the public sector, you may pay a truck driver who doesn't need a college education less than you pay an analyst working in an office at a low level in an office, but that needs a college education or certain skills that maybe a truck driver doesn't need. But that was always a man supposedly earning the breadwinner salary in the home, which isn't true anymore. Women are breadwinners.
Or she's just buying shoes or something, right?
Or, you know, just, you know, helping her husband make ends meet, which is not the case anymore. We know that. We've got the statistics about women being breadwinners and co-breadwinners in over 60% of families. So, you know, so you've got these things that even in the public sector, we have to look at, analyze, make sure we aren't unintentionally discriminating by just the nature of the pay system in, in the public sector. So one of our bills this year, we passed the state public sector equal pay law. We are trying to expand it to municipal and parochial. Let's cover all public workers with this law. We would like eventually to cover all workers in private and public, because we know the worst situation for women is in the private for-profit workplace, where they're making 62 cents on the dollar on average for full-time year-round work. Now, that's lower than 67. It's lower than the U.S. 77. 62 cents is pretty low. That's where you hit the buzzsaw. You hit business interests that are just against any kind of bill that's going to provide any kind of cause of action for lawsuits under, you know, out of fear of frivolous lawsuits. But there just really aren't that many frivolous lawsuits, and there really aren't that many lawsuits. It's such a heavy burden just to even know whether you're discriminatorily paid, find a way to even take your case, you know, to the boss and hopefully get it resolved at that level. We also, in our bills, we make sure that the level, after you've made your initial complaint or request to say, am I being paid discriminatorily? Here's what I'm making. Here's what he's making. Shouldn't we be making the same thing? We're using the Human Rights Commission, which in Louisiana, in a lot of states, is sort of like that mediator that can look into the merits of the issue and say, you know what, she's got a good case. This is true. Maybe you should, you know, equalize pay, or, you know, this doesn't look like this is a discriminatory issue. This employer has very rational, bona fide reasons for your difference in pay, and really you don't have a case here. So the Human Rights Commission is an important step in the process in our state law, and we're going to continue to use it, whether it's for private or public employees.
Okay. I have to read an announcement, but we will come right back with Julie Schwarmer-Harris. This public service announcement is brought to you by WTUL New Orleans. Friends of the Ferry works to promote the Canal Street Algiers Ferry as convenient and inexpensive form of public transportation. More is available online or by phone. Their website is friendsoftheferry.org, and their number is 504-363-9090. All right, and, go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask, you also keep mentioning when a bill hits upon business interests as being like a big block. And I'm just curious, like, what your experience of that has been working in the legislature and what that really looks like on the ground when something like that happens.
This state has a very strong business lobby. Particularly with equal pay, the Louisiana Association of Business and Industry, which is looking out for business interests, but particularly for large business interests. They do have small businesses. I think it's a knee-jerk reaction to certain things that they are afraid of and have historically felt are negative laws or negative empowerment of certain things. They're against raising the minimum wage, even though it's been shown by many economists that raising the minimum wage actually helps business. It certainly helps individual mm-hmm. families making the minimum wage, and it disproportionately helps women, since women are in this state are earning 60% of the people earning minimum wage are women, over 60%. So we know it helps people, and yet they say it's going to shut business, it's going to do this, it's going to do that. It's just not necessarily agreed upon by the majority of economists that it's going to do that. So there's this knee-jerk reaction to stop certain things from happening. We believe that fair pay, fair business practices in the workplace are good for business, and there are actually studies that show that. There are even highly respected business entities that have done studies that show that a fair workplace is actually good for business. We have a letter of support from a woman named Margot Dorfman, who is the head of the National Women's Chamber of Commerce, who has, you know, supported nationally and supports us locally, of course, or statewide, in equal pay, because she knows from her experience and her research that these kinds of practices are actually good for business. They're also good for government, in that government is subsidizing low wages by providing social service subsidies, whether mm-hmm. it's food or housing subsidies, or, you know, government is picking up the slack on this. And what it is it's businesses externalizing costs by not paying fair wages or not paying high enough wages. So we think that the business interests are overreacting to what actually could be something good. It's not just Lobby. The Contractors Association is also afraid of raising minimum wages and raising and equalizing pay. But I truly believe that it would not do what they say it would do.
And I also want to ask you, is there polling statewide of populations about these particular bills that show? I mean, there was recently this article in Princeton saying that our government is an oligarchy, right? Which basically is, I mean, that's whatever you think about that. But the idea that, like, what people actually want is not being represented by the people that vote. So what's been, do they do polling about that, or is there?
Well, definitely on equal pay, overwhelming majority, they want equal pay. They understand the concept. They want it. I think that it would be the reason why a lot of legislators may be more reluctant, even if the majority of their districts would want them to vote for equal pay, is that the business interests are the one that actually donate to campaigns. And you can have people sort of philosophically agree with you, but if you don't have money to run your campaign, you're not going to win. And so they're afraid of losing that support from those interests. Also, it's the larger interests, like business interests, that have the money to pay lobbyists that, you know, sell the other side of this issue much more and more thoroughly than we can as volunteer advocates. I'm a volunteer advocate. Everybody I work with is a volunteer advocate. If we're working, even if we're retired, we're not doing things that we would be doing to drive up to Baton Rouge and try, you know, we don't live up there. We're not paid to have a hotel and be there for the whole session. So it's just hard for us to get as much stroke in Baton Rouge as some of the paid lobbying interests. On some of these other issues, even on choice, there have been recent polls on the abortion issue. The majority, it's not a huge majority in Louisiana, but the majority of people don't want abortion to be outlawed. They don't want it outlawed. They want it available. And a lot of them know that their family members have used that out in certain instances, or but they're not going to talk about it publicly. There's a lot of shame involved in these issues and in some people's minds, and that's a shame because this is a medically sometimes necessary, sometimes chosen avenue. But we know that the majority of people would prefer there to be abortion. They would hope that people wouldn't get them, mm-hmm. that they would prevent it, but then they're not doing what we know the way majority of people want, which is for everybody to have access to health care. Mm-hmm. And our legislature has refused to pass this access for 250,000 people that would get it if they passed Medicaid expansion. So, yeah, they are voting against what I think the majority of their citizens want, but it doesn't always translate into a slap down at the time of voting. And we have to hopefully bring in some new people that will do what people want.
Right. Well, I didn't need a Princeton article to tell me that we have an oligarchy, a plutocracy, anything that is true democracy here. So I kind of I want to talk about just we only have a few minutes left. I'm always thinking about visioning. What is the government that we deserve? What is the government that would actually serve us? Because this one isn't. We're being held hostage. I was thinking while you were talking about the Medicaid, we're held hostage by few people with selfish interests, selfish ideologies that have caused us to be in this place where we're in now. We're with environmental destruction and with all these inequities amongst, you know, by gender, by race, by class. So have you thought of that? Or are you too busy in the, because I understand we're always so busy in the trenches fighting what is that our imaginations are stolen from us in some way to really vision what could be. So I don't know. Even if I just leave you with thinking about that, hopefully when you're on your way up to Baton Rouge.
I mean, those of us who work in the trenches, we think about the big questions, big issues, and it can be very frustrating. Mm-hmm. If you're only thinking about that, though, and you're not acting mm-hmm. on those thoughts, then you are part of the problem. Those who are educated, those who have the time and the wherewithal need to participate in a much more proactive, thorough way than they have in the past. This is a democracy. I mean, it is skewed. Money skews the ability to act in a democratic way. I agree with you. But we do have elections and you don't get shot for voting. So we need to encourage more people to register to vote, to inform themselves, you know, even on a surface level of where their interests lie. Mm-hmm. And at the state level and at the federal level and at the local level, and just to participate. And, you know, you don't have to spend a whole lot of time just getting to know who your legislators are and participating at that level on three issues, four issues, whatever. So really, the burden is on us to try and counteract the money, because the big money is against some of these democratic principles in, but I don't feel hopeless about it. I just try to encourage those who are already active and consider themselves somewhat sophisticated politically to say, okay, you may be sophisticated politically, but you ain't that sophisticated if you haven't been, not harassing, that's the wrong word, if you haven't been admonishing and encouraging your state senator and your state representative to do what you want on a few issues. Take a little
mm-hmm.
time.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, that's pretty much our time. So thank you so much for coming in and having discussion with us. We could have you back later on this session or next year to talk about the, you know, what's happening.
Thank you.
In the legislature then.
Be glad to come back.
To come every session.
Yeah. Oh, goodness. Okay. Well, I want to hear that more than just me is talking about it, and then I'll come back. Bye-bye.
Bye. You're listening to WTUL New Orleans 91.5 FM. This is my... Oh, we're on Wednesday boarding. May 14th, news and views programming. I'm Gahiji here with Kezia. I will do the calendar, but first just let me make sure that everyone out there knows that any views expressed on the show are those of either myself, Kezia, or our guest, or whoever it is that is speaking. Tonight, going on around the city at Siberia, 9 p.m., Nile, Necrotic Priapism, The Art of the Process, Moonhoar. Public House, 8 p.m., Paperbird plus Sam Doors. Always Lounge, 9 p.m., Bustin' Out Music Series featuring Sassafras and Fancy Pants. Cafe Istanbul in the New Orleans, Healing Center, 8 p.m., The Goodnight Show with John Calhoun presents its May 2014 show featuring Brandon Odoms of 2 Cent TV, Bethany Boltman, co-founder of the New Orleans Musicians Clinic, musical guest Big Frida, and comedian Joe Cardosi. Chickiwawa, 7 p.m., Norbert Slamma and Raphael Bass. Maple Leaf, 10 p.m., Eric Benny Bloom. The Hi-Ho Lounge, 9 p.m., Syrinx album release show, plus Delune Deluge, plus Chris Sheard and the Transplanted Roots. Gasa Gasa, 9 p.m., The Shiz, plus Quintessential Octopus, or something like that. DBA, 7 p.m., Tin Men, 10 p.m., Walter Wolfman, Washington, and the Roadmasters. At the Circle Bar, 10 p.m., Soft Spot with Shark's Teeth. Marini Opera House, 7 p.m., Shotgun Cinema presents Mystery Train. At Zeitgeist, 6 p.m., Short Piece, 7:15 p.m., Watermark, 9 p.m., Hate Ship, Love Ship. The Britannia Theater has Rebecca or the Other Woman, 391-87-something. I don't know. I forget the number, but it's not there for me to read it off tune. I was going to try to do it from memory. All right, so you're listening to WTUL New Orleans. It is time for Democracy Now. All right, hope you're having a good start of your day.